Hello and welcome to our podcast. My name is David Pritchard, Head of Marketing here at Sintons, joined again by my colleague, Jonathan Tutu, who is a solicitor in the corporate team here at Sintons. And our podcast today is the 10th in our Understanding Corporate Law podcast series. And today, Jonathan is going to concentrate on due diligence. The podcast will last approximately 10 minutes. So I'm going to pass you straight over to Jonathan. Jonathan, good morning and over to you.
Hi, thank you very much, David. And as discussed, I will be going on to speak about due diligence and a few top tips around the due diligence process in a corporate transaction. First off, what is due diligence? It is the reporting on the contents of a business or a company, and this is a standard part of any purchase or sale when a buyer will want to know the contents of the business, and it will give them a better idea of how it's run and if there's any kind of price adjustments that need to be made as a result of the contents of the business, for example, if there's any debts, etc. The process of this normally starts after heads of terms have been signed and there's been an exclusivity agreement. It's standard for a questionnaire to be sent out by the buyer to the seller. This is either sometimes done directly or by the solicitors with a bunch of questions which want sufficient replies on when it comes to certain aspects of the business. This questionnaire can be tailored to a particular business or a company or a transaction, and it is most likely that this is done for certain sectors, as there's clearly a few questions which will not apply for certain sectors, which would be very relevant for others. We have discussed share sales and asset sales previously, and if it is a share sale, there will be more detail in the questionnaire about the company itself, as you're buying warts and all. As we've previously said, there will be some detail around the exact share composition of the company and all of the shareholders within it. However, if it is an asset sale, this can focus on specific assets which are to be bought, and things like the permissions and the procedure to transfer these assets over for any things which are not owned. For example, if there's anything subject to hire and lease arrangements or certain contracts which are to be transferred across, the buyer has a look at all the arrangements in place and picks what they want to purchase. So there is plenty of scope for certain arrangements to be excluded. The general parts of a due diligence are largely split into two main areas. One, there's financial due diligence, and lawyers don't really get involved in this too much, and it's most likely run by accountants or financial advisors. And then there is legal due diligence. I've compiled a list of the main things which is covered off in these, but this is non-exhaustive and there could be certain other areas. But the main areas which we see are questioned upon is the business and the company, the accounting and the accounts of the company, any kind of finance the company has, any contracts the company has with suppliers or customers, the employment section, which comprises of the employees and the pension arrangements of the business, the intellectual property of the business, the kind of IT systems of the business, what data protection procedures the company has in place and if these comply with the data protection legislation, if there's any litigation which is currently happening or if there's been any historical litigation for the business or the company, if the business requires any kind of consents or regulatory approvals, the insurance in place for the business, which is particularly relevant for share sales if this is to continue, as it is often the case in asset sales that a buyer will arrange for their own insurance to be put in place from completion. Other sections include environment, if anything's relevant to that, particularly if there's any properties involved in the sale and purchase. One on compliance to make sure that business has been run in accordance with all the necessary regulations, and a more recent one, which is COVID. There didn't used to be any COVID queries, obviously, and there's been a lot since COVID's come about around things like specific procedures put in place to deal with COVID when it was its most prevalent, and anything to do with the employment arrangements for furloughing, etc. There will also be a separate set of inquiries around property, and these will be dealt with by the property specialists. When it comes to acting and dealing with due diligence, if you are on the seller side, it is important to be as organized as possible. And what does this mean? This means to have as full of documentation suite as possible in relation to all queries you've got. If you've got documents which are signed and dated, that's great, as buyer solicitors will undoubtedly ask for the final versions which are signed and dated from you, even though we know that this is sometimes impossible to find and sometimes third parties often don't send the final contracts over or have no signed contracts available. There will be a separate questionnaire document, and you will have to provide documents to support all those replies. So it is important that everything is cross-referred to properly. For example, if you're including a reply within the body of the questionnaire itself, you should refer to the specific name of the document. That makes things a lot easier for the buyers and in turn makes things a lot easier for your solicitors if you're a seller, as they will want to glance over the replies in most cases before it goes back off to the buyer's solicitors, just to check that there's nothing which they don't understand or nothing which they would probably think there'll be some further questions about further down the line. If there've been any kind of correspondence off the back of any of the documents or any kind of updates, it's important to provide any of these that you've got. And it's important to provide the due diligence information and replies as soon as possible and early as possible in the transaction, as it is quite a time-consuming exercise. And this is really what kicks in to start the transaction. And it is normally after the questionnaire is provided and after the buyer's had a chance to run through it is when the first version of the sale agreement is sent over. As I've said before, it's kind of custom. It's not always the case, but it's custom for seller's solicitor to have a look over the replies before they go back over to the buyer's solicitors and for the buyer to review. That's just because we see these on a regular basis and we can kind of understand where there'll be some further questioning down the line. It's best to provide all of the replies in as comprehensive way as possible at the start. So if we can go back to our clients and suggest a few areas which need further clarification or supporting documentation, that just cuts out any kind of further back and forth when it comes to further inquiries down the line. When it comes to organizing due diligence on the end of a seller, what we are seeing most often is data rooms. So basically your solicitors will set up a data room. You will either send across all your documentation to your solicitors who will upload it to the data room, or you might upload it directly. This is a base, so everybody will be able to see all of the documentation available. There'll be some strict, or there should be some strict terms and conditions as to kind of disclosure of these. So you can't not breaching any data protection laws. And it's very important that they are redacted for any sensitive information. And this is particularly when it comes to any kind of customers, any kind of suppliers, and in particular, employees and their terms, because you shouldn't be providing these over to the other side without having redacted everything in there. Sellers can choose to send all of the information directly across to the buyer, but what we are seeing now is it's normally done via solicitors. So there's a clean kind of sight of passing on of all of these documents and the information, and a data room just makes things a lot easier for later on in the transaction when it comes to things like disclosure. We do, as standard in our transactions, we offer a data room service for free to make things nice, easy, clean for both our clients if we're acting for the seller and for the buyer as well. So everything is neatly organized and can be referred to if there's any kind of further questions down the line. When it comes to further things to think about if you are a seller and pitfalls in a due diligence process, although I've said that we'll try our best to point these out upon the first sight of any kind of replies to a questionnaire. Things like missing documentation, documentations which isn't signed, isn't dated, aren't very clear or blurry, are obviously going to be a point which buyers request further information for. We understand that in a lot of cases, there's often not available for some of the documents. As I've said before, there might not be signed documents, there might just be flat out no documents available. If that is the case, you've just got to make sure that is clear so we can pass this on to the other side. If there's any kind of missing pages in the documents, we don't intend that you trawl through every single document, but especially around the key documentation, just double check that everything's included in there. If there's any schedules or annex to it, is to those, please provide those as well. If the replies are kind of poorly organized and there's only minor detail and there's no references, it's going to cause quite a lot of confusion from the buyer and the buyer's solicitors. They're undoubtedly going to come back to us and request some further information on those. So please provide all information you have in kind of as much detail as you can. And this just stops any kind of further questioning down the line. We always say, if you're a seller, imagine you were a buyer and you were asking the questions, what would you want to know if you had kind of limited knowledge about it? And please provide the information in as much detail as he can, as it would be to a layman. We understand that it does take a while. It's quite a time-consuming procedure to deal with due diligence, and this is often juggled with dealing with the day-to-day running of the business of the company. I know some companies or businesses are lucky enough that they can pass it off to a certain member of staff who can kind of be focused on that for a while, but we appreciate that sometimes that's not available and it's got to be dealt with alongside the day job. Buyers are realistic about this and do understand the timescales which are involved to reply and produce all the documentation, but as with anything, kind of the quicker it can come back, the smoother the transaction will go. When it comes to thinking about due diligence for a buyer, when you get the questionnaire and the replies through, if you're acting for a buyer in a transaction, you pass these on to the client to review, but it's often that a buyer solicitor will go through the key points relevant to the client and at least skim over the other points just to make sure that from their past experience and from dealing within the industry, they've provided all that's required. The particular things they look at are if you're acting in an asset sale, they will go into detail about any assignments and how contracts can be assigned over, particularly if they're key to the business, as that will have to be arranged. If you are acting in a share deal, they'll go into the detail about the historic share activity of the company just to make sure that the sellers and the shareholders have the right to own the shares and the right to sell the shares. Just as a side point, we've seen a lot of transactions recently where there's been some difficulty, there's been a muddled history, or it's not too clear. And when acting for a seller, a buyer's come back and had some further queries, and they've often requested quite a lot of kind of restructuring documents to put in place the share position, which everybody thinks might be the case, but might have not been effectively done in the past. There might have been such things as share buybacks, which haven't been done properly, which we're seeing as other kind of key crux in that issue. And they often require either a court order or having to go back and ask the shareholders who previously sold their shares to the company to re-execute all the documents. So it's just another reminder to, if you're dealing with any share activity of the company, please do this in light with all the kind of general law and regulations relating to it. Do try and get legal support when doing this and engage with legal professionals and make sure your statutory books are all up to date. After the first set of due diligence questionnaires and replies have come across, it's customary for a few further inquiries to come back to the seller from the buyer for any kind of missing information, missing documents, or where any further clarification is needed. As I said before, if you provide a pretty comprehensive set of replies and documentation in the first instance, if you're acting for a seller, this will vastly reduce the kind of amount of time and effort you've got to deal with any further inquiries. And once that whole exercise is completed, it normally feeds into the disclosure exercise, which will be discussed in the next podcast. And in general, it will give the buyer some comfort about the exact workings of the business or the company that is being bought, the details of it, what they've got to consider about running the business moving forward, and if there's got to be any further negotiation about, say, contracts or the finances of the company. Just as one further point on due diligence, we're seeing a bit more often these days, but the disclosure exercise, which will be touched upon by Sophie in the next podcast, is sometimes incorporated together with this due diligence exercise. They say it's kind of a front loading of disclosure, so you get a set of warranties which act as the questionnaire, basically, which act as the due diligence questionnaire. These all go across to the seller. There's a set of replies which are made in a similar way to due diligence questionnaire replies would be made. And then those feed very easily into the disclosure exercise. It's quite a lot of work to do at the very start of a transaction and to have to also review the warranties and provide everything in disclosure wording, but it does seem to save some time bit later on, and it seems to be preferred, especially when it comes to some technology transactions that we've seen later or dealing with kind of much larger transactions. It does seem to make everything a bit easier for the buyer, but it also does kind of limit the amount of work that needs to be done by a seller later on in the transaction, apart from just obviously double checking all of that information is still relevant. I hope that has been informative. And I hope I've given you a little bit of a background about due diligence and the main kind of pitfalls and as especially if you're a seller, what you should do, what you need to be thinking about, and the best way to present all of that information, and how solicitors will help you run with that, as it is a big task, but it is probably, apart from drafting of the agreement, the main task which clients will actually be involved in and will take up a lot of time. So hopefully that serves to save a bit of time and make things clearer for everybody. Thank you very much for listening, and back to David.
Thanks, Jonathan. Enjoyed listening to that one. Very quickly for me, we release our webinars, podcasts, and blogs on a regular basis, all of which can be found on our website, www.sintons.co.uk, should you wish to take a look. And that includes all episodes of this Understanding Corporate Law podcast series. You can also follow the team on Twitter at Sintons Coco. That's at Sintons C-O-C-O. If you'd like to discuss anything Jonathan's raised any further, please don't hesitate to get in touch with him or a member of the team. Jonathan can be contacted via telephone 0191-226-7878 or via email jonathan.tutu@sintons.co.uk. Episode 11 will be with you in about a month's time. Thank you once again for listening, for continuing to listen. We do appreciate it. Stay safe, everyone, and we'll speak to you next time.